Okay, well, let's see what the plane is. Okay, there's two of them, and they stayed the exact same spot the whole time, but I'm sorry, like I say that.
Oh, my God, I hope that's a plane. Oh, Jesus, please be a plane. Oh, please. Mona Lisa, are you ready for this?
That what the hell is that midway across the Hudson River? It was a perfectly circular dish.
This thing is hovering sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a brick if I thought.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me that the days like
this. Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light, struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, these certainly are strange days indeed, and this program reflects the UFO side of the strangeness. Welcome to those of you listening here in Toronto and Montreal, around the world on the web via the live streams, and to you wherever you're listening to this podcast. Welcome to program number 399. The Big 400 next Saturday, and we're going to have a little gathering here in the studio of about 200 or 300 people who contributed to this program over the last 8 years. Yeah, right. No room for birthday cake, I know. We'd like to hear from you wherever it is that you're listening. You can email us at sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Tonight, Dave Frelott with his take on it. Alfred Lemberg will take us home. Oh, and in there in between, you will recall that a few months ago we were talking with David Cherniak, who is producing a 2-hour UFO documentary for the History Channel. David spent months in preparation, and now he's on a 4-month odyssey around North America in his new RV, satellite up and down link equipped. And we will talk to him, somewhere in a Walmart parking lot in Chicago. He's headed for the Center for UFO Studies, over this weekend. This Dominion Day weekend, this Canada Day weekend here in Canada. To all our Canadian listeners, all happy Canadian Day. And to those of you around the world, you just go ahead and scratch your heads and wonder what those strange folks are doing in Canada. It's flags everywhere today, and especially in the various littles around the city, Little Portugal, Little E. The voice of Wayne St. John in the background,
and
who also joins us tonight.
Well.
Yeah, if the rain permits, fireworks tonight. Yeah. Big firework displays in this city.
Absolutely. You know, my favorite thing to do on Canada Day, I did it three times in a row, which was to perform on Parliament Hill before 145,000 people.
I remember seeing at least one of those performances. Wayne St. John, yeah. An original cast member of the best production of Hair here in Toronto.
And our show last Saturday, the 24th.
How did that go? You did a Hair reprise,
yes.
Sort of, didn't you?
Yeah, we did like 15 songs.
Yeah.
It was an hour's concert, and it went off really great. I just had a blast.
How else would it go?
Well, we were surprised because we actually broke all attendance records. I think someone said there was 1,700 people there in that area called the Pure Spirits Stage.
Down in the Distillery District.
In the Distillery District, yeah. Quite an otherworldly place as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Great place, actually.
Quite amazing. It reminds me of Lancashire in the UK.
Does it?
The cotton mills. And the,
yeah.
The
Brick Road.
Was it Goodrum's Distillery used to be down there?
I believe it was Goodrum's, yeah.
Gin and whiskey.
And now they have a fermenting cellar where they actually grew, brew beer there and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's where you did your excerpts from Hair down there.
Yeah.
And the biggest audience they've ever had down there.
Biggest audience, according to Don Burr.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. Welcome back to the program, Wayne St. John.
Thank you very much, Errol.
Yeah. You're going to tell us more about David tonight?
Yeah. I've got a new story. I actually have quite a few stories that I yet could fill time with that really no one's ever heard of before. The whole thing is so intriguing.
It's an amazing story. Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind.
Yes. Indeed so.
Up in his face kind of contact.
Very much.
Right here in Toronto, for those of you who haven't heard about this before, in the Queen and Leslie area.
That's right. Yeah.
My old neighborhood.
Your old neighborhood.
Where I had strangeness happen to me down there.
And look at you now.
Look at me now. I'm talking about it on the radio. Lord, Lord, who would have thought? Look, Mom, I'm on two of the biggest AM talk stations in the whole damn planet.
And I just hear tonight that your daughter's on air in Britain.
Right.
Amazing. And her initials are E.T.?
Well, her name is Etely, and she gets called Et.
Et.
Or E.T.
That's so cute.
I know, it's bizarre, isn't it? You know, you don't hear from people for years, and the next thing you know, they're doing breakfast shows for the BBC. It's
unreal.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's in the genes, they say.
It is. You can't help it.
No, you can't, can you? Some interesting UFO news this week. I think we have a couple of minutes. Oh, and Dean Gualandi is back here just for this weekend. Well, he's here all the time, but he doesn't do weekends anymore, and it's wonderful to have him sitting out there in Master Control, and Jim Pacheco driving CJAD in Montreal. These guys work their buns off, and very seldom do their praises get sung, and they're not going to be now.
I was going to write a song about them.
Yes. In North Vancouver, BC, back to UFOs, folks, on June 18th, a couple of people standing on a friend's fifth-floor balcony that overlooks downtown and provides a panoramic view. And suddenly, one of the friends pointed out what appeared to be a very bright star that was completely motionless. Now, this star began to get brighter and brighter, and then, to the witness's shock, it began to move. And as it suddenly started moving, two more objects appeared behind it. Now, these two objects appeared to be smaller in size, and they hung there motionless as the larger one began to move toward the harbor. As it got closer, the other two started to move around in circles and grouped together, moving in exactly the same pattern, as if they were somehow telepathically linked, the reporting witness said. There's no helicopter that can stay absolutely motionless or move in the manner that they did. They seemed to watch like little children as the larger mothership took a pass over the city, as if collecting data. A lot of assumptions. Periodically, the lights on these craft would fluctuate and change colors and intensity. The witnesses got a few photographs of the phenomena, some of which were taken 3 days earlier by one of the roommates. He came home and explained what happened when he showed us his pictures that were clearly of the same objects. Anyway, these craft grouped back together and took off at great speed, only to return a half hour later. The reporting witness says until now they were skeptic about UFOs, but now they believe. Thanks to George Filer and Brian Vikes, HBCC UFO, for that report. And we've talked about the UFOs over Mount Popocatepetl in Mexico before. And Eileen Cannon tells George Filer's files that UFO activity is sharply increased above the volcano. Often there are one or two objects above it, but in recent weeks the number of objects has escalated. And there was a lot of screenshots taken from the solstice from the CenePred webcam. And those of you who are interested in going and looking at that, and you have access, connection, CenApred, CenePred webcam. If you look, Google that or use your favorite search engine, you should come across that webcam. Interesting things going on over Popocatepetl.
Here with his take on it is Dave Furloss.
There's an interesting thread on the UFO updates list called SETI and PSYCOP. And the thread has generated much discussion about some of the various theories about ETs or extraterrestrials and whether they're visiting the planet or not and what they might be doing. Now, see, first, if we take PSYCOP, the discussion about ETs comes to an end. PSYCOP proclaims loudly that UFOs and ETs do not exist, and because they don't exist, they can't be visiting our planet. Now, as far as PSYCOP is concerned, anyone who has ever seen or been involved with UFOs or ETs is either delusional, mistaken about what they've seen, or simply is lying because they want to make money from UFOs and ETs that don't exist. Someone should point out to them that if everyone believed them, there wouldn't be a need for their organization, and they'd have nothing to bleat loudly about. Case closed, everyone go home. Oh, by the way, it is rumored that it was a PSYCOPian who came up with the phrase, "Hi, I'm with the government and I'm here to help you." Oh, and regardless of what you've heard, we have never told you a lie. Then, of course, we have SETI's view on UFOs and ETs. Actually, their viewpoint is very well documented in the movie Contact, starring Jodie Foster. It is too expensive for ET to travel to our planet, but they have put together very large video and radio listening stations because they can't wait to see the next episode of I Love Lucy. On and on the outside chance that we might be listening, they're going to send us back some kind of a message to let us know that they're out there. Well, personally, I don't believe it's going to be how to build a machine to let us travel through wormholes across space. Actually, my guess is it's going to probably be something along the lines of, send us all your strawberry ice cream. Now, well, you know, now that we've got PSYCOP and SETI out of the picture, okay, other more interesting theories come out about the possibility of UFOs and ETs visiting Earth. Those who agree that there are other planets out there with intelligent life that is more technologically advanced than us believe a number of different things. Well, one group proposes that UFOs and extraterrestrials are not visiting the planet because they've gotten smart enough to figure out that they should not interfere. It's kind of like a version of that prime directive thing with Star Trek, I suppose. Well, you know, but what came first, the Star Trek rule in a script or the alien rule? Okay, now, part of the thread involves a little bit of a discussion about the ETs not visiting us, but just waiting kind of away from the planet on the backside of the moon or maybe even on bases on other planets in the solar system in order to prevent us from traveling into outer space and, well, basically polluting the universe. Well, now the truth be known, our governments have been looking for new places to dump our trash. But that must be a really bad duty to draw if you're an extraterrestrial. You know, I can see it now. Okay, you're going to our base on what the Earthlings call Jupiter. If you see one of their primitive ships approaching the base, just push the big red button labeled "Don't Panic." Finally, though, there's another group of people that insists that not only are UFOs and ETs flitting around our planet like fireflies in the middle of summer, they're in contact with our governments, and there's some kind of an alien conspiracy going on where the inhabitants of this planet are being brokered. Think sold. Beware of bees floating around in cornfields in the middle of nowhere on that one. Now, don't get me wrong. I like theories. They give us food for thought and a damn good reason to have arguments. But, you know, when it comes right down to it, nothing ends a good argument like a simple little fact. And the simple little fact that everyone with their theories about UFOs and ETs simply can't get over, tens of thousands of reliable witnesses have reported seeing and interacting with UFOs and ETs for more than 50 years now. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlong, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
You ain't gonna let that strawberry ice cream thing go, are you, Dave?
Oh, I certainly am not.
And maybe we should explain to people who are not net savvy that a thread is a subject line.
Yes.
And when somebody posts a new one and people respond, the very second that somebody sends a response to that original email, then that becomes a thread.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, Dave talks about threads on UFO updates a lot, and that's what that word means. I thought I would explain. It is, after all, Canada Day, and we have a lot of explaining to do, so.
This is true.
I think that fits somehow. My brain said say it, so there it was, out of my mouth. Are you coming down next Saturday night, Dave, for the 400th?
I am definitely going to be there next Saturday night for the 400th, by hook or by crook.
Good. And look forward to having you here.
Okay.
Yes, I guess you've been a busy man of late.
It's been pretty nutso in my neck of the woods. Actually, this will be a little thing, and it's kind of apropos.
Yes.
I just got a go ahead a couple of nights ago on my part in dealing with the upcoming film that is going to be done about Tunguska.
You did?
Yes.
Now, how come I haven't heard about this before, and why wasn't I contacted?
Oh, what can I tell you?
Tell us about it, Dave, or is this a little premature to get too deeply into it?
No, it's not too premature. Basically, the 2008 is going to be the 100th anniversary of the event that happened in Tunguska.
In Siberia, the devastation
exactly.
Of forests, of pine trees up there.
Yeah, it just nailed a
yes.
huge piece.
Yes.
Basically an atomic explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's the launch of the actual, it's going to be a documentary, about 2 hours long, and that's what we're working towards now.
Oh, good. Is this with the Russian fellow?
Yes, it is.
So I have heard about it before.
Yes.
Yes.
I told you about it before.
Actually, yes, you did. And for some reason, I thought it was turning into a feature movie or a TV series.
No. That's a completely different project.
Well,
but
this
particular one is aimed at a TV documentary.
Ah. Well, I shall just continue being bewildered eagle and just continue. That's it. Get off the radio, Dave. Thank you.
Okay.
And break a leg with that one.
Not a problem. I'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Good Dave Furlong. Happy to hear that that Tunguska documentary is a go. That's going to be an interesting. As Dave said, it looked. You see some of the pictures. Well, there are very few pictures of the devastation up there because it's in a very remote part of Siberia. But all of those trees. I mean, it's mind blowing what exploded in the air above Tunguska.
Mm-hmm.
What it could have been. Could have been a large meteorite. A meteor. Could have been a nuclear explosion. Some people think it was an exploding UFO.
I heard it was an exploding UFO,
yeah.
Which they removed.
Yes. Do you know what the countryside is like up there? It's bog.
Rough.
And swamp.
Yeah.
And mosquitoes. And back in 1908, they had the equipment to go in there and move it out.
Right.
They were smart guys. Wayne St. John, sitting right next to me here. Scott from Brampton says, you sound like Peter Gabriel.
And you said, Peter Gabriel
sounds like
you.
Wayne St. John. One Love for the Planet is from Wayne's newest album, and it's out there now, isn't it?
It is out there on the airwaves. 273 stations have it, and whether they pick it up. We're waiting for Barry Stewart to say, yay, Wayne, we love this.
Fingers, eyes, ears, nose, and toes crossed for you. And it is out there, as is Wayne. Bubba writes, if there's one thing I know about aliens and Canadians, they're fools for reruns of I Love Lucy.
You got that right.
There's E.T. First Contact for you.
Absolutely.
Wayne St. John has been telling us about a man that he has known for a while named David, who has had an ongoing series of very strange experiences in the Queen and Leslie area of Toronto. And I guess this is part three of E.T. First Contact for you, isn't it?
It is.
It is.
It is, and I'm willing to reveal some very well-kept secrets.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, right,
yes.
Here tonight?
Right here tonight.
An exclusive to SDI.
An exclusive, yes. Are you ready?
Just a minute.
Adjust.
Take an adjustment here.
Adjusts waistband. Unfortunately, his effect is ruined by bum falling off.
I see.
On live radio, too.
Indeed.
Sorry, let's not get That's too right. silly, because you have some quite serious things to tell us.
Yeah, actually. As I've been on before, and welcome everybody listening out there, and I know we've got some fans that are very interested in hearing the level of information that I'm
about to impart.
To impart, divulge. So I'd like to bring back focus to the title of this show, E.T. First Contact, this segment, I should
on
say.
The show.
Indeed. Taking over Earl's show now.
<He is>. Right.
But anyway, this segment, E.T. First Contact, is motivated by the information that I've gathered over the past 37 years, and up until the last 3 years, I've gathered a lot more information, very unusual, different, strange, wonderful information, positive information about E.T. First Contact. And people say it'll never happen, and probably it won't happen by our government's design. But it looks like right now the governments around the world are being inundated with special ambassadors that will, in fact, begin to open up the awareness for people to now say they're out there. We know they're out there. They're everywhere. The craft are everywhere. And I believe, like in Mexico right now, we are having a flap, if you will, for months. People, I know one woman who I called about a month ago in Mexico, and she said that 500 people in a hotel had just witnessed three spaceships just doing all kinds of aerobatics for at least 20 minutes. And this was a woman who didn't believe in anything before, and I was about to tell her a story about it, and she came up with that first. So I was relieved that I didn't have to explain what I was about to tell her.
Mm-hmm. And 500 people in the hotel.
Yes, they all saw it. They all witnessed this. Yeah.
Three objects, four objects?
Three objects, and they were just dancing in the air for 20 minutes.
A lot of that dancing in the air stuff lately, isn't
it? Yeah. But I think that they have to get people used to seeing them, to not be afraid to be sitting up there in the atmosphere doing different acrobatics, doing things that we know that we can't do, our soldiers and our weaponry and our military can't possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
But we do also have information that the American government has spaceships that were covered, and who knows, maybe some of those are getting out there as well. If you take my advice, guys, you'd take one of those to the moon rather than the Columbia or whatever that shuttle is, that thing that you're going to throw up there in the sky. It looks pretty dangerous. But nevertheless, if that's what you want to do.
That's all they got to do it with.
That's what they say. That's what they don't want to let us know what they really have. They really have it all. They do. But that's okay. It's going to take us, audience, viewers, lovers of information like this. This is one of the most popular topics, I believe, on the Internet.
Next to pornography.
Yes, I wasn't going to say that.
I'm allowed.
Yeah, you are. But that's true, folks. It is. It's the second most viewed thing out there. And there's good reason, because there's so much going on. And there's so many things going on right next to you that you don't even see it. You don't know it. You don't recognize it. You can't really get a grasp of it yet. But with a few more craft dancing in the sky, who knows, maybe they're just getting us more prep for this gigantic, overwhelming event.
Talking of gigantic and overwhelming, there was a half-hour documentary last night on the Discovery Channel here in Canada. It was really good. It was on the Phoenix Lights. And what was seen down there was this monstrous, monstrous object.
Yes. Light stretching quite a way.
Right, yeah. Right. And there are three possibilities there.
Yes.
Well, four. People were imagining things. Uh-huh. What they were looking at was alien technology.
Mm-hmm.
Parachute flares, or was home-built.
Or home-built.
In the States.
In the States. You know, I've heard so many different stories on that, and the one I kind of going towards is the one where it was alien technology, and that the American military on some high level had they ran into some of the aliens, which was not a pretty picture.
Wayne St. John is with us, the third part of his E.T. First Contact, and maybe we should get to David, huh?
Sure. All right. here's a third story about David. Now, this would have been around 1962. He was around 12 or so. He has a vague memory of earlier in the day something happened, some big thing was going on with his contactees, his family, and himself. And he got through that day by having a woman, one of the women from the craft, came to visit him. And this was right out in the Maple Leaf Forever Park, right in that space, right where it is now. That park is there now.
And Queen and Leslie in Toronto.
Yes, surrounded by Queen and Leslie and Eastern on the bottom side. And so Dave lived right across the street, basically, from the park, so he was always there. So a lady comes over to him, and she says, we have to leave. We're going to have to go for quite a while. We're going to be leaving you. And he got upset. He was, at this point, looking at these people like his teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things he does not remember on what level they were teaching him, but
they've been shepherding him for a few years. Huh?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. I really literally think they've been around him since he was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and here we go up until he's 12. So he's not too happy about hearing that they're going to leave. And he doesn't understand why. He doesn't have a concept for it. He just thinks he's like being abandoned. So the lady says, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'm going to give you 3 wishes, David.
Mm-hmm.
And David, coming from a poor background, etc., couldn't grasp what she meant, 3 wishes. And he said, I don't believe in wishes. I don't know anything about wishes. So she said, I'll tell you what, come over here. And she took a stick and she drew Aladdin's lamp on the ground. And he thought to himself, wow, she can draw. And he understood what she was trying to draw. The closest that he could recollect what she was drawing was his grandmother had some very ancient, beautifully preserved china, and it was a milk.
Sort of a gravy boat.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he could relate it to that.
Mm.
And she said, I want you to think of 3 wishes, and I want you to just rub it. Just put your hand in the dirt and just rub it. And that's the way Aladdin's lamp works. And still reluctant, he thought about it, and he thought about it. He said, okay. Well, the first wish, he wanted to move from the place he was living in because it was so cramped. Parents were arguing a lot, and that might have had a lot to do with it. It was just very tight living, and they were living with other people. So that was his first wish. And his second wish, he wanted to get into music somehow. He wanted music to be a part of his life. And the third wish, all he could think of was to wish the lady a good farewell. And she said, no, don't worry about me. That's good of you to think that you want us to be okay, but we want you to make a wish. So he had to think about that. And he thought and he thought. And he said, well, my dad is good with kids, because he had just had a UFO incident with the dad seeing the UFO leave with David. At the same time, about 5 or 6 kids came pulling up in their bicycles and said, what is that? So that's what clicked in his mind. My dad is good with kids, so look, maybe he can get a job working with kids. So about 5 or 6 months went by. Dave's walking on Queen Street South, and he hears a voice, and it's the woman's voice in his head, mental telepathy, strong and clear. And she says, David, there's a house across the street, just down going west on Queen Street North, and just keep walking and you'll see it. And so he walked and he walked. He came across a sign at 1148 and a half Queen Street East.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in the house, bravely he's on his own, and knocks on the door. And it's a woman who he had gone to school with her children. And she was very sweet and very kind. And he said that he was looking for a place for his family. And he really liked her place after he looked around. She said, well, if David, if you want it, it'll be yours if you want it. So I guess the next thing proceeded, and he brought his parents there, and they get the place.
Nice.
Indeed. Can we pick up this story?
We've just got hold of David Cherniak.
Oh, did you? Okay, great. So
we'll pick up the story at some point a little later on.
Sure.
Okay, so
sure.
A cliffhanger for people listening.
Indeed.
I like it. I love Aladdin's lamp story.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne St. John, E.T. First Contact. And maybe after we talk to David Cherniak, sort of around 10:35, we'll pick up a few minutes more of that.
Sure.
Just to let you wrap it up before we go down to Alabama and Alfred Lindbergh.
All right.
It's a busy night tonight on SDI. We're glad you're with us. Program 399. In studio with me tonight is Wayne St. John. And we'll get back to some more of Dave's story at Queen and Leslie here in Toronto a little later in the program. Another David joins us now. He's on the road. He's David Cherniak, a man who produced and directed some pretty astounding documentaries in his lifetime. Spent a lot of time working on Man Alive on CBC, one of those series that I loved to watch back many years ago. He is on the road now putting footage together for his new documentary, A History of UFOs. And that's David Cherniak's cell phone. You can hear burbling in the background. David is on the first leg of his four-month odyssey around North America, picking up interviews and shooting footage for his documentary. Welcome back to the program, David Cherniak.
You caught me when you called before. We were just pulling into Chicago on the Ryan Expressway. It was hairy and hectic. So the phone did not get answered because Lorna, the nice TomTom navigator lady, was talking to me, and I wasn't going to risk losing her.
I was going to say Lorna, the GPS woman.
Lorna, the GPS woman. She's got a lovely voice.
Yes, she does.
We become quite attached to her.
I get the feeling that perhaps in about 3.5 months you'll learn to hate her.
No. Leroy, you don't understand. I love Lorna.
No,
Lorna gets me where I need to go without too much hassle.
Yeah, you just put the address of where you're going, and she tells you how to get there from where you are.
That's right.
It's wonderful
technology.
She tells
me and she shows me, and she's rarely wrong, and I often second-guess her and say she doesn't have a clue. And I turn out to be wrong, but she's not perfect. I mean, she does make mistakes, especially in Canada.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't know Canada that well. She knows the States a lot better.
Mm.
And I understand that originally she was Dutch. So if you're over in Europe, you know,
she'll do even better.
She does even better.
And take you right down the middle.
She tells you where the speed cameras are. So.
And take you right down the middle of a canal, I know.
Yeah, exactly. Although I don't have to worry about speed cameras. I'm in a 30-foot RV. It's a home away from home for the next 4 months. It's brand new.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rental. And it's doing the job. We have a satellite internet dish on the roof.
So you've got up and downlink?
We have uplink and downlink high speed, and it actually works. Mm-hmm. And this is compliments of ExploreNet, who graciously decided to provide it for free and for the for the signage on the side and back, both sides and back of the
RV. And, of course, a thank you in the credits at the end of your history of UFOs.
And who knows? The RV may be in a shot with signage. Who knows? But only if it fits the theme. Only if it fits the theme.
Yeah.
But it does work, and it's quite nifty. You push a button, and a couple minutes later, you have high-speed internet locked.
Very nice. You have the best toys, David Cherniak.
Well, I figure if I was going to go on the road to do this film, it wasn't so much toys that I needed as utility. You know, I'm a very utilitarian.
Understood. But I think both words are apt to describe the technology.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, you know, that's my opinion, and what do I know? I'm just a goof who works on AM radio. I don't have the sophistication of FM. Or even DAB.
So, well, FM is in the future, and so probably is this Sirius radio thing. We have a Sirius radio in here, but it doesn't seem to be functional. We can't get the ID number off of it. Every time we try, it kind of kicks out. So,
hey, listen, let's talk what you're doing in Chicago.
All right. Well, we left yesterday, the researcher and I, in the first leg. We stopped in Sarnia to interview Gerald, Fosberg. Gerald Fosberg was the pilot of the C-47 back in 1953. He's 78 years old now and sharp as a tack, but he was the person piloting the C-47 who the U.S. Air Force blamed the Kinross incident on.
Ah.
And they claim that when, for those of your audience who are unfamiliar with the Kinross incident, well, we should probably back up and describe what happened. November the 21st or 23rd, 1953, a bogey was spotted entering American airspace over Lake Superior. And a jet was scrambled from Kinross Air Force Base, piloted by a National Guard captain by the name of Eugene Felix Monclaw, and his co-pilot, I think Robert Wilson, it was Wilson, not co-pilot, he was the radar operator. And this is in the evening, and they were scrambled to intercept this unknown. Tracked on radar, approaching and merging with the unknown, at which point the unknown and the jet were never seen on radar or in the flesh ever again, nor was anything found in the water with all the search parties, etc.
And you would have thought they would have found some kind of wreckage or oil slick or something.
Oil slick, but, you know, the other thing is it was November, it was pretty stormy and pretty windy anyways. So if they didn't find oil slick, it wouldn't have been too unusual. Nevertheless, it was unusual that the F-89 and the object did merge. So Jerry Fosberg was piloting the C-47 that the Americans said had flown 30 miles off course and was therefore identified as an unknown and intercepted. Now, Jerry Fosberg is 78 years old, as I mentioned, but sharp as a tack, and took great pride in the fact that he could fly by, now what was it, by what?
The beam.
The beam, directly between Thunder Bay and Sault Ste. Marie, and was never more than a couple of miles off course, and damn well said so. So when he only heard about it the following day when he received a phone call from some captain at Kinross asking him whether he had seen their F-89. To which he replied, "Yeah, I saw the bugger, and it was in Canadian airspace, and so I shot him down, joking, you know." And then the American officer said, "Well, actually, you know, the plane has gone missing, so we're just checking to see whether you did see it." But he didn't see it, and he wasn't off course. So it's interesting that they had to claim that he was 30 miles off course. The other interesting thing about Jerry Fosberg is he flew for 48 years and never saw a UFO and doesn't believe in them. So It was an interesting interview.
Well, I look forward to seeing that. And that's a funny story. Yeah, I'm in a boxcar and I shot the jet down.
Yes. Yeah, C-47, for those who don't know, was the military version of the DC-3. You know, kind of this boxcar, literally a boxcar,
mm-hmm.
with a couple of engines.
With a couple of engines, just used for moving cargo around.
That's right.
Boy, the United States Air Force has made up some real dumbass stories, hasn't it? David Cherniak is with us. He's just arrived in Chicago. I guess you're headed, for the Center for UFO Studies down there, David?
That's right. We're meeting Mark tomorrow morning, Mark Rodiger, tomorrow morning at the center at 10 o'clock.
David Cherniak making a two-hour documentary.
UFOs and the Politics of Reality.
Ah, there we go.
Yes. It's a cultural history of the UFO phenomenon.
Ah, so I'm going to write that. Would you spell the first word for me? Yeah.
UFO. This is
No, UFO. Yes. An email here from
Oh, geez, you're really
zipping along.
Feeling risky tonight, aren't you?
I am. I'm feeling it's a good energy tonight, David. It's good to have you on. You and I have fun talking on the phone when we're not on the radio, so on the radio is even more fun.
Yeah.
An email from Bubba here down in Carolina.
Carolina.
Yeah. All researchers and filmmakers make judgments about what evidence and witnesses to use in their work. And we've all seen modern UFO documentaries and few that treat the issue fairly, and many judge UFO witnesses harshly. Bubba continues, I think a researcher needs a good deal of empathy for the witnesses and the possibility that these things are real. So my question for David is, when should the viewers question the judgment of UFO filmmakers and their motivations for making the documentaries and then simply quit watching them?
Yeah, I'm perfectly sympathetic to that. I've watched, I've watched more UFO documentaries than I would ever really want to. They're terrible. I mean, almost without exception, there are a few exceptions, but for the most part, you know, they're commercial ventures which are conceived and executed to attract as big an audience as possible, you know, with a jolt factor, and they have utterly no respect for or feeling for the subject, you know. I mean, this is generally true. I mean, there are exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm extremely sympathetic to Bubba's point of view. And one of the things that I have, one of my difficulties that I face, is when I'm cold calling people who haven't heard of me, who, you know, don't know my career or my reputation, and they just see me as, this is people who are within ufology,
mm-hmm.
and they just see me as another filmmaker, you know, just out to exploit the subject. It takes me, you know, sometimes 10, 15 minutes talking to them before I can gain their confidence that I'm treating the subject seriously. And, you know, I would never cast aspersions on witnesses. That's ridiculous. People mm-hmm. see what they see, and you have to respect that. So he has an excellent point.
Yes,
I mean,
I think
the vast majority of UFO documentaries suck.
That's the word. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Have you had anybody that you've not been able to convince that you're a straight ahead, wonderful documentary maker who means them no harm?
No.
Oh, good.
I've had some people who, one person who, in particular, who shall best probably remain nameless, who disagrees with my approach. And
mm-hmm.
Because it's a cultural history, he's more interested in trying to convince the audience that through incidents that UFOs are real.
Yeah.
So he was not that interested in participating in my film. I'm not trying to convince the audience that UFOs are real. I will let them know what my feelings are about the subject, but that's not what the film is about. The film is looking at the history of the phenomena in parallel with the history of the culture and how the phenomena has evolved, emerged, and transmuted as the culture has gone through its various transmutations over the last how many years is it? Well, it's almost 60 years, you know?
Well,
a lot of things have changed. A lot of things have changed in the culture, and a lot of things have changed in terms of what people have seen. And I do think that there are some correlations there. And that, those are the things that I'm going to be exploring. Sure, we'll be looking at the best incidents, you know. There's no question we'll be looking at the best reports because the history of the phenomena is really composed of the best reports. Not necessarily the best reports, but interesting reports. Like the Michigan swamp gas fiasco was not a particularly great UFO report, but it was of immense historical importance in terms of what followed it. You know, it with Gerry Ford being the congressman from Michigan and calling for hearings, it begat the Colorado Project. You know, very directly those 83 co-eds, you know, in a dormitory in Hillsdale College begat the Colorado Project.
Yeah, Buffy and Bunty and...
Exactly. We're going to be interviewing them, too. They were away. We found them.
Oh, good. Congratulations. I'm really looking forward to this documentary, and you know how time flies on radio when you're having a wonderful time. Unfortunately,
we're parked. We're boondocking in a Walmart parking lot on the north side of Chicago. We have to go get some provisions.
Okay.
They close.
Well, off you go. Can we keep in regular touch with you, David Cherniak, on your odyssey, your 4-month odyssey, making this UFO documentary?
You betcha. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, okay, and you and I will exchange emails via your wonderful satellite system on top of your RV.
And
we'll set up the next one.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Thank you, David Cherniak. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks or so.
Thanks, Errol.
And hi to Sarah. Good night. Good night, David Cherniak. He's on the road from Toronto. He could be coming your way. And an interesting first interview with the man who flew that DC-3 or DC-6 or whatever it was that was blamed for, you know, being off course over Lake Michigan all those years ago.
Peace of mind.
Voice of Wayne St. John, cut from his most recent album, is out there right now and getting some tasty airplay, actually. And the title is?
It's called One Love for the Planet, and the album title is Kiss My Planet.
Oh, Kiss My Planet. Nice.
Why not?
And apparently the ETs have been doing that for a little while, too.
Indeed.
And we've come back to Wayne. Wayne's on the program tonight, but we've come back to Wayne because we had a few more minutes to spend, for those of you who were listening earlier on the story of Dave, and he got granted 3 wishes by his contact.
Yes.
Who came out of a craft, a woman.
Indeed.
In the Queen and Leslie area of Toronto.
That's right.
I know a lot of people go, going, oh, yeah, right.
No, it really happened in 1962.
So Dave was given 3 wishes,
basically. Yeah.
It's the old Aladdin story. But so what were the wishes that he asked?
So where I left off was that the first wish was to find a new place to live, where they could have some room.
Right.
And I was telling the story that around 5 or 6 months later, as he's walking down the street on Queen Street, he hears a voice very clearly in his head saying, Dave, follow my voice and follow, go this direction, and you'll find the.
And apartment. It was the female's voice from
female's
his
voice.
Contact.
That's
from
correct.
The craft.
That's
right.
Correct. And
so
and
he knocks on the door. He
knocks on the door, and a lady who her children go to his school, so she opens the door and greets him, and he comes in. He tells her what he wants, that he's looking for a new place for his family, and had just heard about this one. And she liked him immediately because he knew her sons, etc. And she said, you know what, I'll hold this place for you, no problem. And lo and behold, they did move into that apartment. And I don't think the parents...
It was an apartment in a house on Queen Street.
That's right, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was an apartment building, actually, huh? A second level, I think huh? It was. Yeah, it's still there. Yeah, no longer 11 and a half. 1148 and a half is what it was. Yes. They threw a half away. But
that was his first wish.
That was his first wish, and it happened.
It was granted.
And he then was interested in a couple of things. One was he wanted to play music. He wasn't allowed to touch the piano in his house or to do things like that. He was just set back quite a bit for a lot of different reasons. But he was out in the park right next to his new apartment. And that's right at Leslie there in Queen, mm-hmm. and on the north side. And he was playing stickball with a bunch of guys. And they're at it, and he's got the ball. He's ready to hit it, and he hears the voice in his head. David, come south of Queen Street and follow the music. And he looks at the guys, and they're all looking at him, waiting for him to hit the ball. And he says, sorry, guys, I got to go. I can't stay any longer. I got to go. And they just looked at him like he was crazy. He walks away. He follows the voice. And he walks down, it might have been Leslie, and he kept walking maybe a couple blocks down to where the music was coming. And it was the Optimus Drum Corps, which he subsequently joined it. He ended up joining it, mm-hmm. and found a love of his life that he had not had before, because now he's independent, he's got his own little thing, and he's developing his own little world of things that he loves to do. So that was the other wish that definitely came true.
And the third wish?
The third wish was he had actually wished the lady and all of them a safe trip.
Right.
And they said, well, that's okay, that's good of you to do that, but we want you to have another wish. So he said, well, I really would wish my dad could work with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the park was right next door. They had never had a neighbor right next door move into the park like that. Anyway, the dad found a way to apply for that park job, and he got it.
Parks and the Rec. Park keeper?
As the park keeper. And not only that, if I have time to say this, because it's pretty profound when I looked at the whole story, it appears that these people had an effect on the father as well, that they basically were kind of giving him some direction without him knowing it, I believe. I think they had the ability to do that, to interject something into your head, give you a thought or two or whatever, and you'd go with it. And the father put together the first softball team in that area. That was a big hit. And then Dave was in the drum corps. And next thing you know, the father is thinking, well, we should have a parade. And so he went around to all the local stores, which were really harsh kind of people, but they somehow lost their harshness. We're not sure how, but they lost that harshness. And they donated to the parade all the things that they needed. And lo and behold, there is a parade. It's very successful. And the father is built up very highly over the fact that he was smart enough and brilliant enough to pull that off and to have the insight to make that happen.
Many, many stories coming our way, I guess.
Oh, man.
And how close are you to actually recording, Dave, now?
Probably within a week.
Really?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to hear Dave tell some of his stories.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wayne St. John and E.T. First Contact, the regular feature on this here program, and he will be back in a week or so, and we'll hear some more of Dave's story.
Absolutely.
This is fascinating stuff. As I said a couple of times now, I lived in that neighborhood, not in the 60s, but in the early 90s, and that's where I discovered Whitley Strieber in the middle of the night when
you were telling me that.
Being forced out of bed to go down and turn on the TV and put a video tape in the video machine, and there was CNN and Strieber appearing for the first time.
Wow.
Plugging his book, Communion.
No accident.
Now I'm hearing all these stories about what's been going on at Queen and Leslie here in Toronto for many years.
Well, there's
something going on there.
The ET involvement is real, folks.
Mm-hmm.
They are here. They walk amongst us. They are not going anywhere. And it's been a long time that this has been happening. And you just have to get a grasp of it. You know, when the natives were standing on the shores and they watched the ships come in, those tall ships come in, they did not see the ships, ladies and gentlemen. They couldn't see them. Why? Because it was a foreign thing to them. And I think if you look hard, you may see a lot more than you're used to seeing. You have to just trust yourself and trust the fact that we are not alone by any means.
Wayne St. John. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Errol.
And Wayne will be back with more of the Dave story in a couple of weeks. Talented people on this program, not with just with what they do on the program, but outside as well. That's Alfred Lindberg on guitar there, and an MP3 file, or was it a real audio file originally, that he sent me several years ago. And Dean likes that a lot, and he said, I really want to play this tonight. You know?
Oh, cool. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, isn't that cool? And that's not Dean's voice. That's Alfred Lindberg down there in Alabama, a regular biweekly contributor to this program. Good evening, Alfred.
Wow, it's just so wonderful to hear your music on the radio like that. Seriously, it's like a dream come true.
Yeah, Wayne's sitting here grinning and nodding.
Well, I really appreciate the vote of confidence. You know, speaking of music, and that all of your bumper music for the last several programs has been extremely interesting with regard to different musicians across different musical milieus talking about UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's significant of something.
Yes, very much so. And we didn't play Jimi Hendrix tonight, but his cut to that jazz shuffle that he plays at Up from the Skies goes back a long way, too. And John Lennon, who wrote, the theme of this program, Nobody Told Me, and his UFO experiences. A lot of musicians have had UFO experiences.
Yeah, there have even been some books written about them, I understand.
A book, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At any rate, I think it's interesting that, you know, like, notwithstanding, I guess, you know, like, what, could they be dismissed as a bunch of drugged out musicians?
Oh, absolutely.
Musicians?
Yes, they could. Very easily. Just like the pilots and the police and the lawyers and the dentists and the politicians and the military who've all had drugged out UFO experiences.
Amen, brother. back to the program at hand, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time this evening. I was, as always, very impressed with Mr. Cherniak, and I myself can't wait to see that documentary, and would hope that he maybe can engineer a review copy my way, so I can, give it the old...
Well, from your lips to his ears, he's listening to this on the podcast, so he'll hear you. He's heard you.
Cool. Mm. And speaking of hearing and being heard, I just... just so entirely love the idea of him rolling around America in a great big RV that's also jacked into the World Wide Web and its community.
Mm-hmm.
That just that whole concept just blows me away. And boy, I mean, someday, you know, in my own limited little fashion, I hope I can have something like that and be that kind of plugged in. You know,
are you that desperate for a preview of this new documentary that David Churchiak is doing? Sorry, Alfred, I couldn't resist. I mean, you set me up so nicely. And what else has been getting under your skin or through your skin of late?
Well, actually, more about Mr. Churchiak.
Oh.
I was very impressed with his kind of between the lines visual integrity, journalistic integrity that he implied when he wouldn't show the van, you know, with its advertising, mm-hmm. unless it somehow fits some kind of theme. You know?
Yeah, yeah. What's also interesting, and David didn't mention, but he and I had discussed earlier this week, was that he's also making the making of too. So, you know, at some point in the making of, probably that van will show up and the banner for the up and down satellite link. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just the thought that he would make mention of it, like, okay, hey, wait a minute, you know, I haven't sold out and will turn and bite the hand that feeds me if it's appropriate, you know, mm-hmm. journalistically appropriate.
Of course.
I mean, I just kind of look for little symbols and signs of that, and mm-hmm. he seemed to have provided one.
No, yeah. Well, David is a straight-ahead man who has all kinds of wonderful work in his credentials and is ace number one, connected with a lot of very sort of upper echelon Tibetan Buddhists. So, you know, yeah, he's a very honorable and lovely man, is what he is.
Well, doesn't sound like it gets any better than that.
No. No, and I'm hoping for a review copy, too.
Well, at any rate, let's see, what else we got here? With regard to the that talk that he was doing, talking to the old pilot, Mr. Forsberg, in
yes.
1953, the Kinross incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, there's, you know, kind of adjacent demonstration of evidence, proof, if you will, of what Frank Fascino was talking about when you send a United States jet up armed to the teeth with orders to shoot UFOs down if they don't follow instructions, and how they disappear on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we're going to be hearing a lot more about that here shortly.
UFO shoot downs.
Yes.
Frank Fascino reworking his original book on the Flatwoods Monster case, the new version with Stanton Friedman.
Well,
Stan and Frank have been uncovering all kinds of evidence that there was almost a shooting war going on between UFOs and the United States Air Force in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah. Briefly, I have to tell you that the common knowledge is that it is a rewrite of, you know, simply an updating of the old book.
No, it isn't.
No. It's a whole new book, mm-hmm. and the Flatwoods County monster thing, albeit an important detail, is just a facet of what's really going on.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm telling you, he's got it to two or three levels of demonstration as far as I'm concerned, and you know, realizing and admitting up front, I'm no judge. You know?
But
I know there's plenty of reason to disregard what Lindbergh is saying.
Least of all of which is the fact that you go out in the skywatch early in the morning with your mug of coffee and your laptop and UFO updates there.
And see stuff
in the sky.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
and
that's
see stuff.
One of the joys of living in rural Alabama. Not that there are many, but that's certainly one of them, to be able to do that every morning.
Yeah. You know, back to Furlat, that thing that he's getting involved with regard to Tunguska.
Yes.
And by the way, why weren't you contacted? I was equally outraged.
No,
I'm not clear on the cant of the program. How are they going to look at it? Are they going to take the level? Well, of course, there's probably things involved. They're going to be level, but what kind of take are they going to take on it?
Well, let's save that question for next week when we gather together here to celebrate program number 400 of Strange Days Indeed. And Dave will be in studio, and doubtlessly, if you're around, we'll have you on the phone, and you can ask him in person.
Oh, well, that would be great, and I would be honored to be on the 400th program. I was just going to, you know, write in on email. That was my plan.
Okay, well, whatever you want to do.
I'll do whatever you need, dude.
Well, yeah, it's a gathering of people that have worked on this program at present and in the past. So
a gathering of fellow travelers.
Yes, yes, yeah. And unfortunately there will be some who won't be with us, but, you know, that too is life.
Well, I would personally hope that he'd come back and he'd take my spot. Hey, you going to have John Velez?
Yeah, if he's not working. He's just been working his buns off lately.
Very cool.
He's got to keep body and soul together like the rest of us, and things don't always go to plan, according to plan. But, I'm going to give John a call and see if he would care to partake. I mean, hell, we got enough phone lines we can get everybody on at the same time.
All right, man.
Yes.
21st century, I love it.
Yeah, and we'll... The Alabama fog whistle strikes again.
Gotta get it once, you know, like I know it's a hurdle for everybody and want to get it out of the way, you know.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, there would be several people out there bitterly disappointed had they not heard that tone.
Two,
sorry.
Me and Bubba.
Yeah. You and Bubba both, yeah. Good question from Bubba tonight, too. And David answered it very eloquently, I thought. And there have been some garbage UFO programs on. There's a series running here on the Canadian Discovery Channel that is just awful. It's despicable. How could Discovery spend money on garbage like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering if Cherniak had any advice he could give the listenership on what a good UFO documentary would be to watch.
Well, if you watch,
I can predict them.
If you watch enough UFO documentaries, you start to resonate or not very early on in the in the first segment. So if you don't get the first segment, then you know it's not a very good UFO documentary. And after a while, your brain starts to catch those things, and it tunes out.
Hey, it's like Theodore Sturgeon said, 90% of everything is crap.
Exactly. Alfred Lemberg, we need to bail. We've got 40 seconds to say goodnight to everybody. Thank you, sir. And we shall undoubtedly talk to you for the 400th celebration next Saturday night. Good night, Alfred Lemberg.
Good night.
Night. I want to thank Jim Pacheco in Montreal for doing a sterling job at CJAD 800. And Dean Gualandi filling in for Julian McNabb tonight. Thank you, Dean. Splendid work. Wayne St. John, we'll talk to you in the next few days, I guess.
All right, Errol. Yes.
All right.
Your 400th
There's a distinct possibility that we'll all be gathered here together. Scott from Brampton, thank you for coming by again. And to you out there, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading the podcast. We shall talk to you next Saturday night. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any...